I've come to warn you that if you do not stop levying these evil taxes, I shall lead the good people of England in a revolt against you.
And why should the people listen to you?
Because, unlike some other Robin Hoods, I can speak with an English accent.
It's the Robin Hood legend you know, with a Mel Brooks twist. This week, we wrap up our Robin Hood trilogy with a conversation about going down a Saved by the Bell Wikipedia rabbit hole, the timeline of the Mel Brooks-averse, and we top it off with some Yiddish etymology just for fun. We also share our thoughts on the Zack Snyder Justice League cut before finding out if Robin Hood Men in Tights stands the test of time.
Time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Test of Time podcast. My name is Alan Noah, and I know your name, but why don't you say it?
Well, this is James Brief. This, of course, is during the coronavirus pandemic of 2020.
The pandemic continues. The quarantine goes on. How are you holding up? You doing okay?
Yeah, doing okay. The city is it's quietly opening back up, but it'll be an interesting summer.
It is going to be a very different summer. It could be a bummer summer. Our friend Mike Kahn, who is on our PCU episode, said that this summer might give new meaning to that Bananarama song, Cruel Summer, which I appreciated on like multiple levels, you know, because just referencing Bananarama is always a good thing, except maybe in this particular case.
Wasn't it a Ace of Base song?
No, it's a Bananarama song that Ace of Base covered. But before we get into this week's movie, I think we should take a moment to talk about the fact that the Snyder Cut is real. James, all of your tweeting with the hashtag release the Snyder Cut has finally proven worthwhile. I mean, you've got to be ecstatic about this.
Well, I haven't tweeted in probably a couple of years, but what you're referring to is Zack Snyder. He directed most of Justice League.
Did he direct most of it?
Well, that's the thing. He directed the film, and then there was a tragedy. His daughter committed suicide, and so he just couldn't do any of the post-production. And then Joss Whedon, who's, you know, he's a famous director, famously directed the Avenger, first two Avenger films. He knows what he's doing. He did some reshoots. He did some of his own edits, and what was released was it was two directors, you could tell, kind of, there were different tones of different scenes everywhere you looked, and it's interesting because Zack Snyder's always said that he had a very, very different look on these films, and there certainly could be something there, that there could be something better, or it could just be something that people wait forever and it just kind of lands with a thud.
Yes, and Zack Snyder has been tweeting about his version of the movie, and he's been talking about his cut that is so much better than the theatrical cut. Although I did read something where he said he didn't actually see the entire theatrical cut, so then I don't know how he thinks his version would be better than something he didn't see. But regardless, the announcement came that this movie is real. It is going to happen. It's going to be released on HBO Max in 2021. And I guess the big question is, who cares? And I don't even ask that really rhetorically. I mean, I'm literally asking, who cares? And I get that it's like a hashtag that's been trending and it's picked up steam. And there are some people who really do care, but that many? Like, are there really that many fans who are dying to see this? Are people going to sign up for HBO Max just to watch this 1 4-hour movie? Or maybe it'll be a 4-part TV series kind of a thing. To me, I don't know, like, maybe I would watch it, but I'm certainly not going to sign up for HBO Max just for that.
Well, there's a couple of things. I think it's happening at the right time. People are starved for content. So this is, in some ways, a new film for a lot of people. And, you know, people are kind of going to watch anything right now. I actually enjoyed Justice League more than Batman v Superman.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think there could be a decent film in there. It's just interesting. I think it probably all stems from the drama that happened while this film was being made, the fact that the film came out and wasn't as great as people had always wanted it to be. So then there was this idea that there might be a better film somewhere in a vault and, you know, on a hard drive, rather. And yeah, now it's going to have the light of day. But it's sort of like for 20 years, there was this theoretical Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, and you know, we eventually did get one, and that was very different because this one, they're putting about $20 million into this film to finish it up, so this will look like a finished film, as opposed to the Richard Donner cut, which was more like, just imagine there's a tornado here, and Superman fixes it, or something.
Yeah, and if Zack Snyder is doing all of this because this sets up his vision for what the DC expanded universe is going to look like, and you're really going to see Darkseid, and it's going to explain this whole bigger universe, well, that's neat, but it's going to be setting up a story that we're not going to see because that version of Batman is being rebooted. That version of Superman is probably done. I mean, it just seems like even if this movie is phenomenal and sets up this great story, it's still going to be anticlimactic because there's not going to be a good follow-up to it.
Well, I'll tell you the real reason right now why this happened, why any of this is happening. Do you want to know what it is, Al? I'll tell you right now.
I do want to know.
Because somebody is going to listen to this podcast story we're talking about, or they're going to come across an article about this and they're going to go, huh, what's HBO Max? That is the entire point of this. We mentioned it's on HBO Max. Every single article about it mentions it's on HBO Max. You know, and any good comic book movie is good for the industry.
Yes, and if there's a better Justice League movie out there, I'll be into it. Like I say, I don't know that I would sign up for HBO Max just for that, but maybe a free trial, you know, if I could do something like that. But let's talk about this week's movie, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Now, we have been doing a trilogy of Robin Hood episodes. We started with the 1973 Disney movie. Last week, we did 1991's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And today, we are going to be doing the Mel Brooks parody, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Now, I've mentioned this before, that this is the only Robin Hood movie that I had seen, and I had seen it many times, and you had never seen this version, right?
Yeah, and I find it fascinating that you had never seen the other two Robin Hood films when this film is completely based on, you know, in a large part, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and the Disney and more probably the Errol Flynn, the archery competition kind of Robin Hood legends. It's just amazing that you would love this film and never seen anything that it's based on.
That's a very good point. That said, there are Weird Al songs that I used to love as a kid, and they were parodies of songs that I didn't know. And I think that a really good parody is always going to be better if you understand what it's parodying, but at the same time, a really good parody will just work on its own. But, I mean, you've certainly got a good point. Why I never watched Prince of Thieves, listen to that episode for us talking about that. But this movie, like I said, is Mel Brooks' take on the Robin Hood legend in general, and more specifically, a spoof of, like we mentioned, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So in this film, Robin of Locksley, who's played by Cary Elwes, is that how you say that?
He's Wesley from The Princess Bride.
No, he's Westley from The Princess Bride. however you say his name. This Robin escapes from prison in Jerusalem during the Crusades and returns home to England to find that Prince John, played by Richard Lewis, has repossessed his family estate. Robin vows to fight back with the help of his friends Blinken, Will Scarlet, Little John, and Achoo.
Bless you.
Hopefully you find that joke funny because they make that joke about 16 times in the movie. Together, these guys take on Prince John and the Sheriff of Nottingham. Oh, I'm sorry, Rottingham. Robin also tries to win the favor of the beautiful Maid Marian if he can get past her chastity belt.
Ah!
Right. I mean, what a classic problem. We've all been there. So I know that I saw this in the theater. I'm almost positive I saw it in the theater with my dad, who is a huge Mel Brooks fan. But I don't know that it was a massive hit, was it?
Well, the film came out in the middle of the summer, almost 2 years after Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves came out. It came out July 30th, 1993. And Mel Brooks, he got a $20 million budget for this film. And it wound up opening at number six with $6.8 million. But it wound up finishing with $35.7 million. So, you know, so-so box office run. But according to Wikipedia, Mel Brooks says that this movie and Spaceballs are his top two selling films on video, which is interesting. So, you know, he's known mostly critically for, I'd say, probably Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, maybe The Producers. But these are the films that really pushed a lot of cassettes in the 80s or 90s, rather.
Yeah, I could see that. And the movie opens with these guys who are shooting flaming arrows back and forth as the credits are rolling. And then we see that these flaming arrows have burned down a village. And the people in the village are saying that every time there's a Robin Hood movie, their village gets destroyed. And then one of the flaming arrows shoots into a building and it says, directed by Mel Brooks. And they all say, "Hey, Mel Brooks, fuck you." They give the middle finger right to camera. And right away, right out of the gate, this movie is breaking the fourth wall. It acknowledges that it's a movie. It acknowledges that it's a Mel Brooks movie, which is not really all that uncommon for a Mel Brooks movie. Like, a lot of his movies break the fourth wall. And this is the first time it happens, but definitely not the last.
Right. And I might be the first to ever say this term, but this film does exist in the Mel Brooks-averse. It does reference other Mel Brooks films and other jokes from Mel Brooks films that are specifically in other films of his.
But it can't really be in the Mel Brooks-averse, because if this movie takes place in medieval England, then how can it exist in the same universe as Blazing Saddles, which came out in the 1970s? I mean, like, what's the timeline of the Mel Brooks-averse?
Oh, because this references Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
It actually does. Well, you know, after the opening scene here, there is, you know, I guess required for early 90s, there is a novelty rap.
Right. I sort of thought this was cute. You know, you have these four guys rapping about basically just the setup of the story of Robin Hood's off in the Crusades and King Richard is gone. So Prince John has taken over with the Sheriff of Nottingham. That's really about it, except they rap it. They show up again at the very end of the movie, and that's it. You know, they're not like a constant fixture in the movie. They just kind of bookend a little bit of exposition.
Yeah, it's not funny, but it's not unfunny. And it just explains what the setting of this particular Robin Hood film is. So we go now to Jerusalem. So right when I saw this, that's when I'm realizing, oh my God, how have you never seen Prince of Thieves? Because there are so many like exact copies of scenes and references from Prince of Thieves. But just like in the Kevin Costner film, we start out with Robin Hood. He's escaping from a prison in Jerusalem. And they're like, "Tell us about your king." And they're trying to torture him. And he's like, "What, King Richard? King Louis? King Kong? Larry King?"
That is the first joke that makes a reference to something that is contemporary for 1993, but totally anachronistic for medieval England. And again, not the last.
As well as King Kong.
Right. I guess technically King Kong would be the first one, and then followed very closely by Larry King. Then they try to torture Robin with this tongue stretcher. I guess it just like pulls out his tongue and snaps it back. I feel like I remember that getting a laugh in the movie theater.
It did not get a laugh on my couch, but it's the same exact thing as Prince of Thieves, where he escapes from the prison and also manages to free a black prisoner in there. And this guy, his name is Asnees, and he says he is the father of Achu, who lives back in England. And they do ask, like, "Why were you in this, you know, tortured prison for, you know, crusade soldiers?" And he goes, "I was in for jaywalking."
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of clever, I think. I totally forgot that Isaac Hayes is in this movie. That's who plays a sneeze. I forgot this part of the movie. But he has an awful line where Robin is thinking about, like, oh, how are we going to escape? And he says, we need a feat of strength. And then a sneeze says, no, now we have strength of feet. Like, get it? Because they can use their legs to push the chains off of their legs. I mean, like, I like a good dad joke as much as the next guy, but that's really, really bad.
Yeah, pretty bad. One thing I did think was funny here is, yeah, the two of them, they're at the beach, and I thought that they're going to sail home together, like Morgan Freeman sails home with Kevin Costner, but he says, no, you're going to meet my son back in England, Achu, and he goes, all right, well, it's nice to meet you, and then he just dives into the ocean and swims across the Mediterranean Sea, through the Strait of Gibraltar, and up to England. I did think that was funny.
While Row, Row, Row Your Boat is playing in the background.
I did not pick that up, but that makes it even a little bit funnier.
Yeah, I think they're just kind of basically just playing with, like, the tropes of the movie and just saying, like, all right, he's in Jerusalem, but nobody cares. Let's just get him to England. How he gets there doesn't matter. Like, he gets to England, he kisses the beach, he's covered in sand, then he's like, oh, a horse. And then the next shot, he's, like, dressed in the full Robin Hood regalia. He's in the classic green hat and he's got his bow and arrows. It's like, wait, how did that happen? Doesn't matter. Oh, look, there's Achu. It's about just getting the plot going, you know, as quickly as possible. Achu is played by Dave Chappelle, who I definitely did remember was in this movie. This is his first major motion picture role. He's being beaten up by some guards, and he says, I hope someone is getting a video of this, which sadly is a joke that does still stand the test of time, you know, because he's a black guy getting beaten up by, you know, white authority figures.
But he's specifically referencing the Rodney King video from like a year or two earlier from there. But, you know, today does stand up in that regard.
Yes. I mean, you could have never heard of Rodney King and still think that line is 100% topical in 2020, unfortunately.
And Robin Hood and Achu, they do fight off the guards. And before they do, Achu does pumps up his own Reebok pump. So that was shoes in the early 90s. They had a little airbag inside the shoe that you'd squeeze a little ball on the tongue of the shoe and it would inflate.
But it's not a joke. Like, there's nothing funny about it. Like, Achu says, wait, I need some air. And then he pumps up his shoes. And then he's like, okay, now let's fight some more. It's not like a joke in any way, shape, or form. It's just saying, like, hey, you know those things that people have? I have them too. And that's it.
I think it's a joke that the fact is, when they first came out, people were like, oh, you need these to be a better athlete. And then I think people quickly are like, no, these are just like a stupid toy. And I think that was the joke for people back then that knew in that short window that pumps were only a fashion item and not really a practical athletic piece of footwear.
Maybe. I just thought there should have been some kind of punchline of like, they are medieval pumps or something, you know? I don't know what medieval pumps would look like, but something.
Yeah. Robin does go back to his home and he finds that not like in Prince of Thieves where his father, the whole devil worshipping plot. No, his castle is repossessed by the sheriff and not just taken ownership. Like, this is now the king's land. Like, no, they actually put the castle on like moving trucks and then, well, you know, medieval like horse and carriages and then just drag the castle away.
Yeah, and that's kind of funny. It's just like a silly visual gag. Once the castle is moved away, we see Blinken, Robin's blind servant. He's been left behind. He's sitting on the toilet reading a Braille version of Playboy. And why is this character blind? Because there was a blind guy in Prince of Thieves.
But to be fair, the Braille Playboy was not Braille letters. There was actually a, like, almost like a Barbie doll glued into that paper. And he was, like, feeling with his hands. Like, there's a little, like, woman's figure on there. So he was feeling the breasts and stuff.
Oh, okay. But yeah, this actor, I knew he looked familiar from something, and I was pretty sure that he was on Saved by the Bell. I thought he was a teacher. He was not a teacher, but he was on Saved by the Bell. He was one of the guys who worked at the Max. Not Max, who is like the magician, but like one of the other regular servers in Saved by the Bell. Yes, I did go down a Saved by the Bell Wikipedia rabbit hole earlier today. No, I am not proud of that fact.
Awesome.
The things I do for this podcast.
And then we meet the Sheriff of Nottingham, who in this film is called the Sheriff of Rottingham for no particular reason.
This joke just makes me think of Mad Magazine. I don't know if you read a ton of Mad Magazine when you were a kid. You must have, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, instead of calling it Superman, let's call him Stupid Man.
Exactly. It's like changing one or two letters for no reason. It's like, what does it buy you to call it Rottingham? Literally nothing. I don't get why that's funny. But there's another timely reference in this scene where a kid just starts running to camera, screaming, and it's just supposed to be like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone. You know, like right to camera. And then he says to Robin and Achu and Blinken that he's being chased by the sheriff's men. And then we meet the Sheriff of Rottingham. Later on, when the kid runs off, he starts screaming again. That joke is only funny if you remember Home Alone. Even then, maybe it's still not that funny. But there is one good line with the Sheriff of Rottingham where Robin kind of knocks him off of his horse. So he's just kind of like underneath the horse. And the sheriff says, well, now I'm really pissed off. And Achu says, pissed off? Where you are, I'd be more worried about being pissed on.
Yeah, and then the horse runs away with the sheriff underneath him. It's a funny visual because it's such an obvious mannequin that's being completely trampled yes. underneath him. It's a good thing they did not try to go for realism because it was funnier this way. The Sheriff of Nottingham, I couldn't put a finger where I knew him from, but it turns out he was the actor that was from the sitcom Cheers.
Oh, yeah.
He played the millionaire Robin Colcord, who was Rebecca, Kirstie Alley's boyfriend towards the end.
Yes, I watched Cheers when I was a kid, and I remember the first time I saw this movie, I was like, oh, it's the guy from Cheers. I looked up his IMDb page. He's done a couple other things here and there, but I think most people probably know him from Cheers and this movie.
The main villain in this film is Prince John, played by Richard Lewis. And he goes, I don't want to hear any bad news. And the sheriff comes in and he's about to tell him like, oh, you know, Robin Hood just came and beat us all up and says, I'm going to come get you. But he doesn't want to hear any bad news. So the sheriff, he tells him what I just told you, but he's like hysterically laughing as he's saying it to make it not like bad news, as if it's very funny.
Yeah, the gag isn't really that funny. I like Richard Lewis in general. I mean, 90s era Richard Lewis. I mean, his shtick was all about like, ugh, everything is terrible. That was just sort of his persona. And he's basically playing that kind of character in this movie. And I think by and large, it works.
Oh, I think Richard Lewis's kind of humor works very well in this film because he looks kind of bored here, but not in a like he's an actor that's bored to be there. That just is Richard Lewis. And if you ever see him in Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I know you haven't, Al, it's exactly the kind of humor he does. It works for this film.
Exasperated. He always just seems exasperated. And in this movie, Prince John has a witch-like character, sort of like in Prince of Thieves. It's a woman named Latrine, also Mad Magazine-sounding name. It's played by Tracy Ullman, who is phenomenal. And you think that she's a witch, but at one point she actually says that she's not. She says she's just a cook, and she's putting all of these disgusting foods and eyeballs and testicles into a dish, and you think it's to make a magic potion, but no, she's just making an omelet. And she gives it to Prince John, and he says it's like a satyr at Vincent Price's house.
When I saw that, I go, that is a line that Mel Brooks wrote. And he called up his buddy, Carl Reiner, and said, I have a line about Vincent Price that is going to kill. And both of them laughed hysterically. And nobody that today is under the age of, I'd say, 70 would really find funny. But I did find funny only because I was chuckling at the idea of Mel Brooks laughing while he wrote that line. I thought it was just cute.
Oh, so this is just a made-up phone call in your head between Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner.
Yes, because this is a film that is like for young people. And Vincent Price was like in like the 50s, like these black and white Dracula films, not the famous Bela Lugosi. He was like a B-movie actor. And our generation knows him mostly. You know what I'm going to say, right, Al?
Oh, yeah, Thriller.
Exactly. So he's the guy that talks, if there's a thriller tonight, like that's his voice. When you say, this play looks like I'm eating a Seder at Vincent Price's house, and also not everyone knows what a Passover Seder, a Jewish meal is. It's such a like Hollywood Mel Brooks reference, and I loved it for that reason. But it's not a widely accepted joke, I would say.
Right. So meanwhile, Robin meets his band of merry men. He and Achu and Blinken try to cross a bridge, and there they meet Little John, who is defending the bridge, and Little John challenges Robin to a fight in order for him to pass, except that like this bridge is over like a, I guess maybe you would call it a babbling brook or a stream or something that you could very easily walk over. And Achu is like, you don't need to fight him to use this bridge. You could just step over it, but it's a matter of principle. And I do kind of like this fight between Robin and Little John, where they're both holding these big giant sticks and they're batting them into each other. And then every couple of seconds, it breaks in half. They throw away one half and then they keep doing it again. And the sticks just get smaller and smaller and smaller. It's kind of cute. Obviously, Robin wins. Then we meet Will Scarlet, who is Will Scarlet O'Hara. That's a Gone with the Wind joke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was quick. I didn't get it. But I mean, I understand it. But he goes, I can block any arrow. Shoot an arrow at me. Robin Hood shoots an arrow at him, and he uses a dagger to, like, basically cut it into pieces so that it blocks him. I'll tell you that I was totally ready for the arrow to just kill Will Scarlet. He would die and he would just go, oops, or maybe even point to the camera. And I was going to think that was hysterical, but that's not what happened.
I mean, that's morbid, James. I mean, it is a comedy.
No, but I just thought it'd be like, oh, well, I guess he's not in this film. You know, they would make some line like that.
Yeah, but instead he chops up the arrow and then before, when he said his name was Will Scarlet O'Hara, he says he's from Georgia. So then Achu says, what part of Georgia are you from? South Central?
Yeah, that's a total test of time thing, because the early 90s was all about like South Central Los Angeles is totally Compton and it's a war zone. And there, I think like there was a movie that came out that year called South Central, and the joke's a little dated. And
yes.
Even more dated is right after that, they all decide to team up and they're all going to be friends. And Robin, he doesn't really jump that well onto his horse and fails. And then Achu shrugs and goes, man, white men can't jump. And that's, of course, the movie that we reviewed recently and was an early 90s timely reference.
Right. Timely at the time. So Robin crashes this party that Prince John is having, and Maid Marian is there. She is played by Amy Yazbek, who I recognized from her role on Wings. And Wings was on after Cheers, right? I think on Thursdays on NBC for a while.
Yeah. It was. I think it might have even been a technically spin-off of Cheers, because I think Frasier was also on that show. Because I think I remember reading that like Kelsey Grammer has played Frasier or won an Emmy for the character on like multiple TV shows.
Frasier is a spinoff of Cheers. Characters from Cheers occasionally made special guest appearances on Wings, but I don't think Wings was officially a spinoff. I think it was made by the same people.
But if the characters exist in it, it's a spinoff.
No, not necessarily. Shows just do crossovers sometimes. Anyway,
there is a funny thing that happens at this party. Robin Hood shows up with a huge pig, and King John, Richard Lewis, who's a Jewish guy, he whispers, "Treif," which is a kind of like a Yiddish term for not kosher, like pig. It's something Mel Brooks would put into his screenplay. I don't know if you picked that up.
I did catch that. And Robin Hood comes into the room and he's making his big declaration that he's fighting back against Prince John and the Sheriff of Rottingham. And John or the Sheriff says, "Why would anyone listen to you?" And Robin says, "Because unlike other Robin Hoods, I can speak with a British accent." He says that directly to camera. And it's a joke just for the audience because, haha, remember 2 years ago when Kevin Costner was Robin Hood and he was just speaking with his American accent? Well, there you go.
Well, that was the joke, I can tell you right now, that was at the end of the trailer for this film. I remember specifically this line from this film. I'd never seen it before. And it was the funny line from the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent zing at Kevin Costner.
And one thing also at this party, the party breaks out into a huge fight. And there's a couple like zany things that happen. There's one part that Blinken, he's the blind guy, he is fighting what he thinks is a bad guy. But it turns out that he just keeps whacking his sword at like a wooden pole. And this is playing at like 5 times speed. So he's kind of like whacking at this pole so fast that it's like sawdust is flying everywhere. There's a part where all these knights are lined up and Robin Hood like bangs into one of the knights and like 100 knights like fall down in perfect domino succession. It's kind of like a Mel Brooks, just kind of zany gag.
What I really liked about that moment when Robin knocks all those knights down is when he grabs the rope to like swing down and knock them over. Did you happen to notice that right behind him, there was a neon exit sign like right above his head?
No, I didn't.
That's got to be deliberate. Like, I didn't look that up, but that's the sort of thing that, like, someone on IMDb would write that as a goof, but that's not a goof. I'm quite sure Mel Brooks put that in on purpose, and I just thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't he trying to escape? Like, if there was a big, like, here's the exit, dummy, like, I think that works. I think that might be the gag. I missed it, but that's kind of funny.
I think it's just meant to be there as like an anachronistic thing, but it is funny. The good guys escape. They go back to Sherwood Forest and Robin gives this speech that's supposed to, you know, inspire all of the people of Sherwood Forest, but it really just bores them. That's sort of a recurring theme in this movie, that Robin Hood is really bad at speechifying and he just puts everyone to sleep. When he first starts, he says, "Lend me your ears." And then everyone like throws presumably their ears, just fake plastic ears at him. I don't know if that's supposed to be a leprosy joke. It's just not funny.
Well, it's like he's speaking like Shakespeare. And then his thing totally fails and Achu comes and then he does a speech. I mean, this is a test of time thing, but he's referencing a very popular film from the time, Malcolm X. And he's taking liberties with a quote from that film. And he goes, "We didn't land on Sherwood Forest. Sherwood Forest landed on us." That, of course, it's Plymouth Rock in Malcolm X. And that inspires everyone, same way that Malcolm X's speech inspires people. I got the reference, and it's Dave Chappelle. You know, him doing a Malcolm X impression was pretty funny in medieval England.
And in the two previous Robin Hood movies we watched, there was Friar Tuck. This movie has Rabbi Tuckman, because of course, it's a Mel Brooks movie. This is the Mel Brooks role. I mean, he always, or maybe not always, but he frequently casts himself in his movies. And of course, you know, he wouldn't play a friar or a priest. He plays a rabbi. It's pretty funny. When he introduces himself to the merry men, the rabbi says, "So you guys are Fagulas?" And he kind of moves his hand up and down. Basically, the Yiddish word for gay. He's asking if they're gay. And Robin says, "No, just merry." And I don't know. I mean, like, should I have not even said that word? Is that like the Yiddish equivalent of the F word? Is it not as mean-spirited? The way I heard it growing up around older Jewish people, it was never meant to be mean-spirited. I don't know. You might know better than me.
Well, as far as I understand, a fagel is actually a pigeon in Yiddish. And there was this weird Eastern European stereotype that must be from like the 1800s or something that gay people were referred to as fagel. And that the way that if you've ever seen pigeons, they walk around, they kind of bob their heads forward. That was for some reason some stereotype that an Eastern European homosexual man in the 1700s might have done or something. So it's a weird thing. But yes, to get back to what you mean, that's the etymology of that word. So fagel, I think here it was probably, to be honest, it was probably one of those 90s things that wouldn't really hold up. But I did think that Rabbi Tuckman was pretty funny. I like one part where he goes, you prince of thieves, you. And, you know, it's like he totally had to reference that. Because like I was saying last week, it's kind of a silly title for Robin Hood anyway. And there's another part I liked about him where he said, we'll drink all this wine and we'll bless them all until we all get meshuggah. Which is get crazy with drunken wine. So it's funny. It's like when he was yogurt.
Right. He makes a lot of moil jokes. A moil is someone who performs a circumcision, and there's a lot of gags about circumcisions.
That's true. I forgot about that. He does make too many of those jokes.
Yeah. They run a little long. That's what the moil said. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. I have to guess in my own backstory that Mel Brooks is friends with the actor Dom DeLuise because he basically plays Don Giovanni, and the whole gag is that he's doing Marlon Brando as the Godfather, and it's a good Brando impression. I'll say that I've just never found Brando Godfather impressions to be funny. Everyone does them, but they're not comical. I mean, there's good ones and there's bad ones, and this one was fine. But I just thought the scene was a chore. It felt like Mel Brooks and Dom DeLuise were having a real good time doing this scene.
I agree with you. This scene does go on way too long. I did sort of like the bit about one of Don Giovanni's henchmen who's there. He had his tongue cut out. And the reason he had his tongue cut out is because he did one of these to an enemy. And like stuck out his tongue. And so that guy cut out his tongue. And Don Giovanni likes to tease him and say, hey, can you do this? No, he can't do it because he doesn't have a tongue. Ha 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 ha. I kind of thought that was funny just because it's so stupid. That sort of just went from so stupid that it's not funny into, oh, wait, now it's so stupid that it is kind of funny. But I agree with you overall. That scene was a little long and not all that funny. I guess that henchman guy is supposed to look like Clint Eastwood. I mean, it doesn't really like pay off in any kind of Dirty Harry parody. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to know what Clint Eastwood looked like as a younger Dirty Harry kind of guy, too.
Back in Sherwood Forest, there is the Men in Tights musical number, which is basically just one of those things that I remember kids in my middle school, high school, whatever, would just sing a lot. We're men in tights, tight tights. We roam around the forest looking for fights. That's really all I remember. It's mildly amusing and mildly catchy. I don't know. It's not the funniest thing in the world, but it kind of got the nostalgia in me just because I remember a friend of mine who used to sing it all the time. There is a really funny bit when Maid Marian comes into the forest and she and Robin are talking and she mentions her chastity belt and that someone has the key, but who knows who has it? Which is a little bit weird because earlier in the movie, Robin was told that he has a locket that contains the key to the greatest treasure in the land, which at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, we find out is the key to the chastity belt. But he's completely oblivious about that. And while they're talking about it, he says, oh, if only it were me. And Maid Marian says, oh, if it were you, it would be terrific. That kind of made me laugh. I don't know why. It's pretty hokey, but I thought that was funny.
British grammar and like that Shakespearean stuff. That's what they're going for.
But speaking of that, the next scene is they have a spring fair, which is where they have this archery contest, which we remember from the Disney Robin Hood movie, and it's a trap to get Robin Hood out of hiding. But at the sign for the spring fair, they just spell it F-A-I-R. They don't put the E at the end. It should be a ye olde fair-y.
Absolutely.
That is a hashtag missed opportunity right there. That bummed me out. But in this version, Robin Hood makes the bullseye. Then Don Giovanni's guy splits Robin Hood's arrow in two. And everyone is very confused because that's not the story of Robin Hood that we know. But then they all check the script and find out that no, Robin gets another shot. Once again, these are characters who are aware that they are in a movie. They have the script on them, and then he gets another shot, which is, by the way, a Patriot arrow. So what's that a reference to, James?
So the Patriot missiles were from the Gulf War. This is the 1991 war against Saddam Hussein. And Saddam Hussein would fire the Scud missiles and America fire the Patriot missiles, which were some kind of heat-seeking, like they could find them. It's a couple generations back from what we have now. But Robin Hood, he's shooting a Patriot arrow. So when he shoots this, even though someone tries to shoot it off course and it flies in the air, it goes wild, flying through everyone and underneath legs, and finally not only hits the arrow that hit Robin's arrow, but it blows up the target.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very specific reference that a lot of people just aren't going to get. Also, specific references in this scene, the audience who's watching this contest, at one point they do the Arsenio Hall, like whoop, 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 whoop. Later on, they do the Atlanta Braves chop, which I think they still do. I'm not sure. Do they still do that tomahawk chop?
I think some of them do, yeah.
Definitely not PC, but you know, in the early 90s, the Braves were a very popular team, and so everyone kind of knew that. After Robin is unmasked, he is arrested by the sheriff of Rottingham. And as he's leading Robin off to the gallows, he says, "Walk this way." And he walks in this very affected style, you know, slunches his arm back and moves his shoulder side to side as he's walking. And because he said, "Walk this way," then Robin does that same kind of walk. And I have to give a shout out to my dad, Richard Noah, who made that exact joke every single time we were ever in a restaurant and a host or a hostess was showing us to a table and said, "Oh, follow me, walk this way." And then my dad would do that exaggerated walk this way. I mean, that's the daddest dad joke there is, but I couldn't hear that gag in this movie and not think of my dad.
Oh, well, shout out to dads. So Maid Marian, she wants to spare Robin's life, and she tells the sheriff, "You know, if you don't kill Robin Hood, I will marry you."
Right, and there's supposed to be the wedding, but it doesn't happen because Robin's friends show up just in the nick of time. The merry men were able to send for reinforcements by sending a fox to everyone else in Sherwood Forest, and that's supposed to be a gag of, like, sending a fax, but instead it's a fox. And that's a joke that's going to fly over people's heads now. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it almost just seems like sending a raven on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there is a really good showdown fight at the end between the sheriff and Robin Hood. And I just got to say, I love any Carrie ELWES sword fight that I ever see, the Princess Bride and this film. They were a lot of fun. I thought it was a fun sword fight.
I was going to say, are there any others?
I can't really think of any, but I can't really think of many other movies he's been in. He was in Saw. What else do you know that he's been in?
I can't think of anything else.
That is a shame because he's very likable.
Yes, but Robin Hood is able to fight off the sheriff, and he stabs him, actually kind of accidentally. Like, the sheriff just kind of runs through himself on Robin's sword, and he's going to die. But then Latrine, who is the witch cook Tracy Ullman character, shows up and gives him a magic pill that will save his life, but only if she'll marry him. So he doesn't die. There's not really any death in this movie. You know, even like in the fight scenes, they don't kill people. They just kind of knock them out or whatever. But, you know, it is revealed that Robin has the key to Marion's chastity belt, and Marion has this handmaiden who's there who has to protect her virginity, and she shows up right before Robin unlocks the chastity belt and says, "You must go through it before you do it, or else I blew it." So they say, "Fine, we'll get married," just to stop her from nagging them so they can have sex, which is a bad reason to get married, but whatever. Just like in Prince of Thieves, during the wedding, King Richard shows up. This time it is played by Patrick Stewart. We get a classic Mel Brooks line of "It's good to be the king" when Patrick Stewart kisses Maid Marian before the wedding takes place. But yeah, then Robin and Maid Marian get married. That is one thing that happens in all three of the Robin Hood movies we've seen. They all end with Robin Hood and Maid Marian getting married. Right? That happens in the Disney movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, it ends with them driving away in a marriage carriage.
Yeah.
I do like a couple Richard Lewis things. When King Richard shows up, Richard Lewis goes, "Oi, now I'm in trouble," now that King Richard's back. And Patrick Stewart says, as punishment, "Put him in the Tower of London. Put him in the Tor." I thought that was funny because a Tower of London is it's a tourist trap in England, but it's a torture area. So it's interesting.
I don't remember seeing or hearing about Prince John in the Tower of London from my trip to England. I don't know. Is that real? Is he really there now?
I don't know if he's really there.
Oh.
But I do like at the end, they do make Achu sheriff, and they mention that it worked out in Blazing Saddles to make a black guy sheriff. But what was even funnier is then Blinken, the blind guy, he goes, wait, he is black? Like, I just thought that was like a funny line.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, that's the end of the movie. There's a little epilogue at the end where Robin and Marion, it's their wedding night, and the key doesn't work for some reason. And then he's like, "Oh, I better call a locksmith." And that's how the movie ends, which is a weird ending. But yeah, that's the end of the film. James, what do you think? Does Robin Hood : Men in Tights stand the test of time?
You know, that we reviewed only one Mel Brooks film so far, and that was Spaceballs, which is a very similar film to this in that it is really Mel Brooks kind of spoof on a major Hollywood film. And, you know, the difference is that Spaceballs is, I think, like 1987 and Star Wars is 10 years earlier. This movie came out almost 2 years to the day after Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So it seems like there was some stuff that was maybe a little rushed and not as polished, I'll say, as Spaceballs. But I think you actually summed up this movie perfectly in something you said earlier in this podcast. And this film is a Mad Magazine take on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And with Mad Magazine, if you've never read it, it's pretty much a lot of the jokes are just simply puns. Like, we call him Sheriff Nottingham. Now it's Rottingham. I feel like he kind of like scrutinized Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He's like, remember when Kevin Costner gets to the ground and kisses England when he's home from the Crusades? It would be funny if he did the same, but it's muddy. And I'll admit, I did totally recognize the two scenes because I watched them 2 weeks in a row. I did think that was kind of a funny gag. There are funny things in this film. I do like the cast. I think almost everyone is very good in what they do. Richard Lewis, you know, you mentioned his kind of like whatever comedy. He's kind of like a Jewish New Yorker, like, ugh. And that kind of, it's funny to me because I was noticing over the last two films, especially Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, how Christian that film is. And it just was kind of funny with the, ugh, this is so treif and not kosher, this pig you're bringing. I thought that was kind of funny. But the thing is that it's a Spaceballs attempt that was just kind of lazy. He just recycled a lot of the same exact gags. I mean, a Lone Star was carrying a necklace around his neck in Spaceballs the entire time. That was the secret to the ending. And it turns out that Robin Hood did the exact same thing this time. I thought probably one of the funnier jokes in the film, it just happens to be an exact copy of one of the funniest jokes in Spaceballs, which is when they take the script out of the actual film. I thought that's very funny.
Just to riff on that for a second, there is also in Spaceballs the Dot Matrix, who's, you know, like the C-3PO like companion to the princess. She has a virginity alarm. That gag is recycled here. And both of those movies end with not just a wedding, but a quick wedding where it's like, do you? Yes. Do you? Yes. You know, like they have to do like the quick version of the wedding.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like somebody watched Spaceballs and they like Mel Brooks's humor and they did a not as good version of a Mel Brooks film. That's what I kind of think this is. And this one happens to be done by Mel Brooks. This is probably where his movies are starting to not be as witty as they used to be. For me, no. This was, I think, the weakest of the Robin Hood films. I was actually thinking this was going to be really bad because I saw an article this week. The headline was, Battlefield Earth is no longer the worst movie ever written. And the article says, the screenwriter of Battlefield Earth says that he watched Cats, and he goes, I no longer wrote the worst film that's ever been written. And it says, this guy, whose credits include Battlefield Earth and Robin Hood, Men in Tights. And I saw this article like 2 days before I watched the film, so I was like,
oof.
Oh no. I actually had my expectations set really low for this. And I did laugh at half a dozen things. Unfortunately, there's a lot of parts that are not just not funny, they're like, that's what an unfunny person would think is funny. But Mel Brooks, you're funnier than that. And this film, it does not stand the test of time. It was not as bad as I thought it was going to be a couple days ago, but I think I was just disappointed. Good for him that it made a lot of money on video, I guess, but for me, it does not stand the test of time. What about you, Al? I know you loved this as a kid. Just how does it hold up watching as a father?
Well, as a father, doesn't have anything to do with it.
It has everything to do with everything with you.
No, that's not true. I share a lot of your opinions. I mean, it was disappointing watching this movie again. It's a thing that's happened throughout this podcast where we say, oh, let's watch this movie that we loved. And especially with comedies, it's like, oh, I thought this was the funniest thing when I was a kid, when I was a teenager. And now I watch it and I'm like, I thought that was funny. And I mean, that's sort of the whole thing we do here. A lot of the one-liners in this movie are bad. A lot of the jokes are just not funny. It's a movie that takes place in medieval England, and yet so many of the references in this movie are totally dated because they make contemporary references to things that were happening in 1993 that are no longer a thing. Even just like some sight gags when they show up at Prince John's party, someone's putting a club on a horse, you know, like a big giant oversized club, that thing that people put on their steering wheels in the 90s. These things don't really make sense anymore. Breaking the fourth wall, we've talked about it before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It worked for me when Mel Brooks did it in Spaceballs with the watching the video of the movie. Everything that's happening now is happening now. That to me is funny. In this movie, it just kind of doesn't work for me. It's one of those things, it's not an exact science, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But that said, there are some really clever parts of this movie. And when I was talking about like that exit sign gag, I noticed a lot of little things like that in this movie that are jokes that they don't call attention to. They're just in the background, and those things are really funny. When Asnees and Robin are in Jerusalem, there are these camels that go by and they're being ridden by jockeys. Like, that's weird, but no one mentions it. And it just happens. And that's kind of clever. when Prince John is in the bath and the Sheriff of Rottingham is talking to him, in the background, you see that Prince John has a whole pile of bunny slippers. No one talks about it. No one mentions it. They're just there. That's kind of funny. To me, what is the absolute funniest thing that I don't know that I ever noticed before is that Ah Chu has a snapback hat. It looks like he's wearing a baseball hat backwards with the snapback. I thought that was really funny, and no one ever talks about it. It's just there. So Mel Brooks put some really funny bits into this movie, but they are unfortunately overshadowed by bad jokes, outdated references, also just like kind of weirdly bad acting. And there's just these like awkward pauses where it seems like someone forgot their line for a second. I'm with you, man. This movie does not stand the test of time. It's a shame. It's a bummer, but it's not as funny to 40-year-old Alan as it was to 14-year-old Alan.
Yeah, it's a shame. I will give credit to one joke that I thought I actually laughed out loud. So the king, Richard Lewis, he has a big mole on his face. And I kept thinking that they were going to just like talk about how ugly it was. And like an Uncle Buck or Austin Powers, there's going to be like mole, 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 mole. But they don't. There's just one part when he's in the bath and the sheriff goes, "Wait a second, wasn't your mole on the other cheek recently?" And his response is actually, "Wait a minute, I have a mole?" And I thought that was kind of funny.
I mean, they had mirrors in medieval England. I don't know. But that is the end of this movie and the end of our Robin Hood trilogy. Next week, we are going to come back with a movie that has nothing to do with stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Bend It Like Beckham.
Yeah, because I miss sports.
Aw, that's sad. I have never seen Bend It Like Beckham. I'm curious to see what this movie has to do with one of my top five favorite Spice Girls. Posh Spice, Victoria Beckham.
And you will.
I'm looking forward to it. Until next time, we want to hear your thoughts on the Robin Hood movies. We want to hear your thoughts on pretty much everything. We are at Test of Time Pod. We also want you to write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Do it. You've got time. You're sitting at home doing nothing. Come on. Let's go over to Apple Podcasts and write us a nice review. And we'll see you next time, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.